Hello, and welcome to Enabling Commons, a podcast at the McGill Center for Human Rights and Legal Pluralism. Enabling Commons is a space for dialogue among persons with disabilities and their allies to explore strategies that will transform our environments, our commons, to be meaningfully enabling for all. Hello, my name is Ellen Spanable, and this is Enabling Commons. Today, we are both very lucky to have Fionn and Jonathan Angus as our guests. Fionn and Jonathan are a son and father dynamic duo and the faces behind Fionnathan Productions. They have a lot of public speaking experience, particularly about nature and climate justice. They also like to do stand-up comedy and both play traditional Irish music. Fionn and Jonathan, thank you so much for being here with me today. I would just like for you to tell me a little bit about yourselves. Who are you? What do you do?
Okay, well, I'm Fionn.
And I am Jonathan.
And together we are Fionnathan.
And thank you for having us, Ellen. We're really thrilled to be with you today.
Yeah.
And maybe we start by saying, what is Fionnathan?
Yes, sir. Well, so how Fionnathan came about was when... Well, we were talking about various options for a social enterprise name, right?
Yeah, because we didn't think that when you were leaving high school,
yeah,
that you would fit well in the kind of programs that we were told that people with Down syndrome are supposed to go into.
Yes.
And you wanted to do... other things. Your ideas about what your future would have was much more ambitious,
yeah,
than the kind of offers that were on the table.
Yes.
So what did we tell the Department of Health officer here in Ireland that you wanted to do instead?
So I didn't want to shine my life away to a local service. Provider here in Ireland, and I said to the officer that I wanted to direct my own direct funding support.
Yeah, and at that time in Ireland, there was no one yet, apart from people with physical disability or sensory disability, who had been given a personal budget to hire their own support people.
Yes.
And so, not surprisingly, the officer said, no, that's not an option. And I think this is one of the first lessons that we learned about advocacy.
Yes.
What? How would you describe our response?
And so when he says no, all we had to ask him was, well, why not?
Yeah. and repeatedly, you know, because then he said, well, that's just not done yet. And we said, now I was researching a PhD in how family members can support young adults with intellectual disability to achieve their dreams. So I'd done my homework and I said, I understand that you don't have a program like this yet. I also understand from your own documents that you recognize that this is a human right that you're not yet providing and that your bosses are a little embarrassed that they're not doing it yet. And we are giving you an opportunity to do the right thing. Fionn had already told me that he would hire me as his assistant.
I did, yeah. And so I did.
Right, because it took us a year to negotiate it and work all the details out. But eventually, yeah, they did give you the first, they called it a pilot project.
Yeah, they did.
The first personal budget for your own supports. And yeah, one of the conditions was that we would have to start a company together. And so that's where Fionnathan Productions came from.
Yes.
We are effectively a service provider for one person, but yep, we do so much more than that.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah,
we, not only am I employed by the company, right, but you are employed, yep, by the company. We're really good at finding government funding and things and creatively working things out. So we realized that once we had a company, we could employ Fionn using a government program through which half the money for your wages is kicked back to the company. But we were able, when we realized, well, we're a company, we can employ you.
Right.
So we can talk this through and figure out what is your perfect job.
Yes.
And so together we created for you a pretty awesome job. But we may talk more about the details of that as we go on.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a super helpful explanation of how Fianathan got started. I do want to hear more about what your dream job is, like a little bit more about the different parts of Fianathan that are special and make it what it is.
So we are a social enterprise that works in the fields of the arts, media, and education.
Yes, and all of those came from, I think, when you were a teenager, and
yes,
like dads everywhere do, I was asking you, well, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Right.
And you would give me a different answer every time I asked the question.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, so Fionn plays, for instance, plays the violin, plays traditional Irish music. And so sometimes you would say, I want to be a professional musician when I grow up.
Yes.
And I thought, well, okay, maybe I can help you with that.
Yeah.
But then when I'd ask you again, you might say, I really want to be a nature expert. I want to be a filmmaker that makes films about wildlife all over the world.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, maybe we can do some version of that.
Yes.
So we decided that if we're going to create a job for you, we would involve performing music.
Yes.
Making films.
Yeah.
Educating children.
Yes.
Sharing what we're learning by giving guest lectures at universities.
Yeah.
Traveling the world,
yes,
and doing art, doing visual arts, and
yes,
showing your artwork in different galleries and such. So
yes,
so Fiona has a lot of pieces to your work. Maybe it could be summed up in about 8 different categories.
Yes,
but they do come down to those 3 that you mentioned.
Yes,
right. Say them again.
The arts, education, and media.
Okay, I want to hear a little bit more about the education. What do you like to teach about?
Okay, so teaching children, I love children actually. So for those, I teach them about the nature. Children love animals, so, and teaching them how to love animals in their neighborhood, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to cherish them.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So our work with children, we're sponsored through the Heritage Council of Ireland.
Yes.
Fionn became Ireland's youngest heritage expert at the age of 17, when most of the people on the experts panel are, you know, graduate level scientists, natural scientists and such. But we approached the council and I said, my son is pretty amazing. He has studied diligently, hundreds of hours, both in the books and out in the wild.
Oh, yeah.
And he knows his stuff and he's got a lot to offer to young people about the world of animals.
Yeah.
And because of my background, I taught in Waldorf schools for about 25 years. And so I had a lot of experience teaching. And so we did this together.
Right? Yes, and I just mentioned that I'm a Waldorf graduate. So my dad was a Waldorf teacher in the system, and I'm a Waldorf graduates from the very same system.
Yes, and one of the things we learned through that is to treat people in ways that are appropriate to their stage of development and not to treat little children like mini adults. So, whereas we are very concerned about the problems of the environment, we don't bring this concern about the about the big scary issues to young children. Instead, we focus on what's the main message that we bring to the younger children?
To embrace the love for animals.
Yes, we think only if they have that foundation of loving the earth.
Yeah.
And the human relationship to the earth is all about the many ways that people help the world.
Yes.
When they're interested in the world. And we talk about farmers, and we talk about researchers.
Oh, we do, yeah.
And we talk about all the good that people can do toward and with the natural world.
Yeah.
And then when the children are older, well, then we talk about what?
About problematizing the whole issue of invasive species of animals, plants, and
all that. The idea of invasive species is a good example. We wouldn't talk to small children with this idea, this kind of horrible idea of invasive species. But it is something that we're told is a reality, and one of the main problems. So I think then we talk about the tragic ways in which people are hurting the earth.
Yeah.
And but of course, inviting conversation about ways that we could improve things.
Yes.
Both locally and globally.
Yeah.
But first comes love.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Wow, I really love that. Like, just learning from a really young age to embrace the love of animals and nature. Can you tell me about some of the different things that you teach kids about when you're acting to care for the environment?
Yes. So we would make these things called nature mandalas. So we would take children out into the woods that are close by their school, and we would take them out, and we would have them like pick out colorful flowers or pink cones, the kind of things that the woods provide, and the children would make these big, wonderful, colorful circles of all kinds of forms, with ferns and pine cones and all of that. And children really, really do like that. They love it, actually.
Yeah. Our goal is to teach the heart and to awaken empathy and interest. It can be to make us aware of what's here in our immediate environment just by collecting up things, little treasures that we find in the woods.
Yes.
And that can be profound. There's so many lessons in that, but maybe one is about appreciating our assets as a community, our natural assets and our social assets. And that's a big part of when we think of the intersectionality with disability.
Yeah.
To see what we have. So what's one of our favorite words for the work we do? We even trademarked it as beyond Fionathan. We sometimes think, well, maybe we'll trade, or we'll do some projects with this name.
Abundance.
Yes. So we really, we want to remind people, or to help people to recognize that the world is abundant, and that our worlds are abundant. And maybe at the moment, in terms of being locked down during the pandemic, it's easy to get depressed. And we're deeply concerned for the children. We think that they are one of the groups that are paying the most for this situation that the world is in. And that, of course, is also true if you replace the concept of COVID-19 with the concept of climate crisis, and it's the children who are going to suffer the most from it. But at the same time, to not spend too much indulging in negativity. We love to flip the script and to say, look at what a wonderful time it is.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, with disability, you know, to look at, gosh, I mean, as a we sometimes use the idea of a family with disability rather than an individual with disability, or in, as well as the individual. We are a family with disability. And it's an amazing time. There's so many opportunities to make things better. So you could say, oh, there's so much injustice in terms of social inclusion and such. Or you could say, isn't it great that there's so many opportunities for us to make things better?
Yes.
Wow. Well, speaking to both of you is just a breath of fresh air, I think, especially with all the despair people are feeling right now. And your message is really, really powerful to people and communities. We've talked about, you know, the education you've done with kids and some of the things you have taught, but can you tell me about university lecturing and your experience giving lectures to people from all over the world?
Yeah, it started a few months into once we knew that we would be getting the personal budget for Fionn. And we were already so convinced that this was the way forward in terms of disability support as a system, that there needed to be an option at least. And we knew that in other countries, but not all, there already was the opportunity for people to manage their own supports. But in Ireland, we were the first family doing it.
Yes.
And so I reached out to, I think it was at University of Limerick first.
Yeah.
They said yes, so we put together a presentation and we played some music. And like one of the core messages is, if you're going to work in the disability support industry, you need to start thinking of the people or the person that you support as being your boss. The real reason you're there is because of this person. So give them the lion's share of your respect and do their bidding rather than the institution's bidding. But basically, we just tell the story of how you are in control of me, of your supporter, and that my job is to help Fionn have a great life in your own version of that. And, you know, we also recognize our privilege, the fact that I was able to set aside any other work so that even though your budget is rather meager and only amounts to about 10 hours a week of pay for me, I said, that's okay, I'll volunteer the other 30 or 40 or 60 hours that we do every week together. But just as a model, as an approach, and the idea of employing Fionn through the company to make your way in the world as a professional.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So we gave that one lecture.
Yeah.
It went well.
It did, yeah.
By now, this has been about 6 years.
Yeah.
We have given lectures in, I think it's about 13, 14 of the colleges and universities around Ireland.
Yeah.
But there's another nearly 20 colleges and universities in other countries that we've given talks in, and international conferences. So that's really, we love that.
Can you tell me about some of the research you have done about nature, in terms of data collection, that kind of thing?
Well, so we are also members of something called the Byrne Bio Landscape Trust.
Yeah, and that's a really special organization. I mean, the Byrne is a very special place.
Yes, it is.
It's unique in the world as a karst region in Ireland, which is, of course, lots of exposed limestone, and it doesn't have many plants. It's almost like a desert. And it is Ireland's first, and perhaps one of the first in the world, landscape charities. And they have the farmers who use this rough land to raise cattle and sheep and such.
Yeah.
They work alongside the environmentalists, and together they figure out ways that the humans working on the land can be part of the solution. And so that's very exciting. So
yes,
that's maybe one of our most interesting collaborations that we've done.
Yes.
That is very, very interesting. Fionn, I have seen that you have a YouTube series where you like to interview people and experts, and in particular, interviewing experts about climate change. So I'm wondering why you started doing that, and then I have a couple more questions about that.
Well, for starters, I'm definitely passionate about the climate and the effects it has on the world of communities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where were we in the world? It was pretty amazing trip.
Oh,
when
yeah,
we first came up with this idea of doing the climate change interviews.
Yes. We went to the amazing Amazon.
We did.
Yes, we did.
So we were in the world's largest forest, and we were very deep in the forest. Our hosts live some distance up the Rio Negro, about 30 hours boat trip from Manaus. And we were staying in a community of about 50 people who live there. And every day we spent in canoes because it was during the wet season, so the river was flooded. So you literally have hundreds of miles of water with the forest. And what were some of the animal species we saw there?
Oh wow, we saw incredible animals there. One of them was really amazing, which is a two-headed snake. Now, I did know with amphibians, with certain frogs, that they do have eyes on the rear ends to frighten their enemies. But the thing, so on a snake, what I think of two heads, it's being forked.
This kind of snake is a species of snake that has a real head at one end.
Yes.
And a tail that looks a lot like a head. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had never heard of it, and most books don't have it, and you search the internet for it, and it's very rare. In fact, our host, who had moved to the Amazon about 2 decades before we met him, originally from Scotland, said that for the first 4 years, the locals had been telling him about this species, and he didn't believe them. And it wasn't until finally he saw one himself that he realized they were true. Now, we saw it in the 2 weeks that we were there.
Yeah.
It was an amazing place. And the people there were really amazing. And we realized they're living such a simple life there. So just seeing how people can live such a simple life caused us to think there's some real lessons here that we could all learn from. So why did you think that you would be a good person to collect the stories about climate from these people who live there?
Well, simple answers to simple questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fionn's very good at asking simple questions.
Yeah.
And we figured when it comes to climate change, part of the reason we believe that people don't do more is because it's so complex, or it's made to seem so complex.
Yeah.
And you've got the message is just so dense and so complicated that it's easy to find lots of problems with it, right? And we really just wanted to make it very simple.
Yeah.
And so do you only interview experts, like experts with college degrees and that sort of academic experts about climate change?
Well, yes, I do interview experts, but as well as experts, I also interview citizens.
Yeah, people who are expert by experience.
Yeah.
like farmers and fishermen and just people who are living their lives in harmony with nature, right? So
yeah.
A lot of the people that you interview are to ask, what's going on with the climate? What have you experienced in your lifetime?
Yeah.
Is really important to capture these stories of people's personal experience of how the climate has changed since they were children. That's an example of one of the questions that you came up with.
Yes.
And there's only two questions. The second question is simply, do you have ideas for people? What can we do to mitigate or to slow down climate change? So very basic questions, but Fionn has been able to ask amazing people all over the world.
Yes.
These questions and so many interesting answers that have come from that.
Yeah,
so can you tell me a couple of things that you have learned from interviewing these people? I know that, you know, like you've interviewed so many people and they all have very different experiences, but what are some of the things that you have taken away from it that are important to you just carrying forward?
Well, I remember interviewing someone and he mentioned something about the drought in Uganda.
Okay.
Well, it's about global warming, isn't it?
It is.
That is about the earth actually drying out because of global warming and this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's also a message about being aware of things that are happening that in different parts of the world that aren't affecting us directly, that we need to be aware of the changes that other communities are experiencing.
Yes, and global warming does have an impact, definitely in both the Arctic and the Antarctic regions.
Yes, and when you interviewed the two climate activists from the Pacific Islands.
Yes.
They talked about the projections that their islands will be underwater soon. And how we all need to take responsibility for that. So what's a kind of key message that you would say about all of that?
To act locally and to act locally but start small.
Okay, and in what way act?
Citizen research and citizen action.
Yeah. For us, you don't need to have a doctorate degree to take an interest in the climate and to do little things. And you can see big results if what you're focusing on is literally or figuratively your own backyard. You know, so it's really important to work with local communities and to aim small initially, and that can be very rewarding.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I like that. Act locally, but start small. Before I ask you a couple more questions about your work in disability and inclusion, actually, I just wanted to ask if there were any other things you wanted to talk about with the messages you like to share about nature, the educating you do, the research you have done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we could make a little pitch about a project that we're going to be launching this summer.
Yeah. So, breaking news, it's a podcast and video channel that we are calling Zoosophy. Well, the direct translation from that Latin or Greek word of Sophie is wisdom.
Wisdom, yeah.
Or love.
Or the love of the thing. And the thing, zoo, of course,
is Latin for animal.
Yeah. So you could say the love of animals, you could say the wisdom of animals.
Yeah.
It's this project is about animals and people. And because I think there are environmentalists out there that would say, the world would be a better place if we just got rid of all the people. And we reject that notion.
Yes.
We think the world is a better place because there are people here. That the relationship between the human and the animal,
yeah.
If you look throughout time and around the world and in so many ways, can be really amazing. And the lives that humans live because of animals,
yeah.
And the, I think it's fair to say the lives that animals live because humans are in their lives is worth exploring.
Yes.
And so that's the idea of zoosophy.
Yeah.
And we're, as you said, it's both a podcast,
yeah.
And a video channel.
Yes.
Because we couldn't limit ourselves to,
yeah.
to one or the other.
Right.
So this summer we will be launching that. We haven't worked out the platforms and all of that.
Right.
But you can
yeah.
surely find it by searching for us.
Yes. Fionathan.
Because we're the only Fionathan on the World Wide Web. So
yep.
it's easy to find. I think it'll be spelled in the notes for this episode. Is that right, Ellen?
That's right. So zoosophy. I'm going to keep my eye out for that because that sounds really cool. I love that. The love of nature, love of animals, the wisdom of animals. A big problem within, you know, environmental justice and climate justice is that often people are working in their own categories, in their own silos, and it's hard to create conversations between different groups of people. So I was just kind of interested to hear your thoughts about bringing those different people together and having those conversations.
Yeah, you could say when Fionn was born and we learned that he had Down syndrome, it activated us, right, as
yeah.
activists. I think that's
yeah.
sort of, that happens for a lot of families with Down syndrome. So you become concerned first about why is this system or these many systems unfair toward my child? But then it naturally follows on, why is this system unfair toward all these other children and adults who have Down syndrome? And then by logical extension, why are these systems unfair toward a number of other groups? Right. So I think it is a natural progression to suddenly become aware of injustice in a broader way. And also because one of the pieces of your job description is international travel.
Yes.
To amazing wildlife destinations, which of course now we're reconsidering what with global matters and carbon,
yeah.
carbon footprint and all of this.
Yeah, that's a big factor.
But we've taken an interest in people in other parts of the world, and we recognize that when we talk about the climate disaster and the human effect, there's a sort of a historical burden that's not equal amongst all people of the earth. That there are certain people who have a much greater responsibility for getting us to this situation than others. The responsibility shouldn't be borne equally either. So if you ask, well, what should people with disability do about climate change? How would you start it? That an answer?
The same way everybody else can.
Yeah, all people can do things.
Yes.
And your project interviewing about climate change gives a lot of answers to the question of what can people
yes.
do. But climate justice would suggest that people with disability don't have to do the heavy lifting here. We need to give more to the marginalized peoples of the world in our neighborhoods and on the other side of the planet. And so really, I'm a bit uncomfortable about the idea of what can people with disability do to mitigate climate changing, because really, you know, to make things fair, to be just, most of those people, if you will, or most of us who are find ourselves in the situation of being marginalized should have more and should have a better share. So the idea that we should all sacrifice because of the situation we're in isn't really looking at the historical and current injustices. We have to do both. And so it's really important that the right people sacrifice. I think that people with disabilities have a unique task. And you could say, again, on any marginalized people, when Fionn is included, so say like academically, like you haven't been to university yet,
right?
But you've taught, you've worked for a lot of universities,
yes,
as a guest lecturer.
Yes, and even though I didn't get like a leaving certificate, but I did get a leaving certificate applied program.
So that's the Irish system of leaving secondary school.
Yes. Because I don't have the same marks like any other student would, I don't really have those marks to go on to like college or university or any other like technological institute of Ireland.
So the standard pathways to third level education are blocked for you, and unfortunately there isn't yet enough of non-standard pathways in. But that's one of the things that we're really fighting for.
Yes.
But what I wanted to say about you, Fionn, is that when you have been included,
yes,
not only in educational settings but anywhere in society, it's of great benefit to you to be included. But that's not the end of the story. It's also of great benefit, Fionn, when you show up for the rest of us, the people who don't risk being excluded, the people who are kind of comfortable in, well, of course I'm included, it makes us realize how much difference there is and how much commonality, of course. But it really makes us stretch. So I think people with disability, in terms of fighting for a better world, are giving a great gift by honestly being themselves and by just arriving and just speaking with their voice, whatever that might be, right?
Yeah.
And so I think leadership is really important. And Fionn, you are becoming a very competent young leader.
Yes.
And one of the things that I love about that is that it's not a disability leader, or it's not a leader in disabilityness. But when you go to the classroom with the young children, many of those children will in the future learn about Down syndrome or about disability, but they don't yet know what that is. They just see a guest teacher. They see this guy who knows a lot about animals, a grown-up who can teach them.
Yeah, well, what about this? Like, when we went to a particular school, there's this one child that has Down syndrome, and he's like the rest of them in that class, and then when I walk into their classroom, and all the children see me, and even the young lad with Down syndrome sees me, his friends, his classmates see me, and they're like, yes, there's a fully grown teacher that looks like our friend, and then oftentimes, so sometimes I would talk about animals, and then I would then jump in and say, "Hello there, little guy. Nice to meet you." And
some of his classmates, it clicks for them.
Yeah.
And other ones, it might come much later.
That's true.
But I think it will. I think they'll remember Fionn. I think for their life through, one of the, we all create stereotypes. You know, it's shorthand. It's the way that we get through the world. The stereotype that's being created when the children experience your teaching is different than the sort of the old-fashioned stereotype about people that look like they have Down syndrome.
Fionn, can you tell me about the music that you like to play, the traditional Irish music, the violin?
Okay, well, where I play, well, that's on Shop Street, which is the main pedestrian street in Galway, and people react in a very like a unique but a wonderful way when they see me.
They're oftentimes quite surprised.
Yeah, so they often are.
Most people just enjoy the music, right?
And they might
toss a coin into your case.
Yeah.
But some people who kind of make the connection that here's a young fellow with Down syndrome who's playing traditional Irish music.
Yeah.
It can be quite a surprise for people.
Yes.
And we know that both because people do a double take when they're walking by.
Oh, they do.
But more often they'll stop and have a conversation with you.
That's right, yeah.
And do you remember, we only learned this after the fact. It was a young couple. They didn't have their baby with them, but they were new parents of a child with Down syndrome.
Yes.
And they were both musicians. They did say, "It's only sad that our little daughter will never be a musician like us, because, well, she has Down syndrome." They told us later that they rounded the corner and they saw you playing.
Yes, they did.
And they said to one another, "Everything's gonna be all right."
Yep.
And that, I think, is a big way in which you do your advocacy.
Yes.
Just by being who you are and by showing people what's possible.
Yes.
Something I wanted to ask you both about is your love for comedy. When I was looking up your shows and stuff, you talk about everything, like from like movies to talking about injustices. And like, I love that. Like, creates a sense of community. But I just like, why did you start doing that? And like, tell me a little bit about your journey with comedy.
Yes. So how it actually started was, well, to begin with, my father here, at first, of course you can speak for yourself, but...
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
Yes, well, he had fear starting out on just getting up on stage and telling jokes to people.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, look at Fionn and all the things that he has attempted and achieved.
Yes, I love jokes and telling jokes, but sometimes if I was to try to share a joke with friends or people, well, I put my biggest fear is sharing jokes with people that I don't know well. So this kind of my biggest fear in that,
but then you
get the laughter out.
But then you performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yes, and I loved it. And
the world's largest arts festival. festival.
Yes, and we got people laughing, actually.
We did indeed.
Yeah.
And there's comedy and there's comedy. And
yes.
So we want to do comedy that tells the truth.
About the injustice.
About injustice. And it was Bernard Shaw who said, if you want to tell people the truth, you'd better make them laugh or they'll kill you. And I think that we have used the opportunity to say some uncomfortable things. I'm usually the butt of the jokes, right? And I think that's really good that people see you as being the one who's in control of the partnership. We call ourselves Fianna Thin.
Yeah.
And there's reason behind that, because you're the leader of this project.
Yes.
And so the humor is often that way. And we did have a one strange experience at Edinburgh where we part of the routine was taking a bit of the steam away from John Down, Dr. John Down, after whom Down syndrome is named, because we learned doing a bit of research that, well, like a lot of other learned men at the time in the 19th century, he was a racist. And we are kind of questioning, well, do we celebrate him when we call this condition Down syndrome? And should we? And we do a funny little routine about what if John Down had a different name?
Yeah.
Right? And which one do you think would have been the best?
Fantastic syndrome.
Fantastic. If it was named Dr. John Fantastic, that would have been one example. So we did our show as we did each night, and at the end a couple came up and said, yeah, we like your show, but we didn't like the part about John Down. We're great-grandchildren, or maybe his grandchildren, but they were in John Down's family, and they said, you know, we understand that he was a very nice man. The next evening and for the rest of the week,
I love this part.
In our show, we told the audience that this had happened, and I said, well, that explains the icy stares during the show. And then you said,
icy stairs are difficult to climb.
And that proved to be the best pun of our show.
Yeah.
You guys are so talented, and that takes so much courage. Hopefully someday I'll be able to come see one of your comedy shows in person. Yeah, I did want to ask you, Fian, a little bit more about what you would like to do in the future, what you would like to study, some of the people you would like to work with someday, some of your dreams in the next couple of months.
Well, just to point out back to the environment and animals, I was actually inspired by Sir David Attenborough's Planet Earth because I'm so inspired by Sir David Attenborough, and I just want to be out there like David is, or at least was, and I just want to follow him in his footsteps, basically.
Yeah, definitely, definitely he is a hero. So thanks for sharing what kind of inspired you to go into that field and do that research. I have one more question, and then I'll ask you if you want to talk about anything else. But actually, my question is a question that you like to ask other people, Fian, and as part of some of the interviews you do. And I want to ask you, what do you love the most about your life?
Yeah. I love relationships. I love to build community, and I also love the concept of interdependence.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you should explain why, what is this interdependence that you love the concept of?
Yeah, well, really the tool is independence and the goal is interdependence.
So often in the world of support for people with intellectual disability, the the idea of independence is held up as like the ultimate goal. And we have problematized that.
Yeah.
And we don't buy it. We don't think that independence is all that great. Because what is independence?
Independence is Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah. Robinson Crusoe, it's being alone, right? It's having no connection to anyone else, having no responsibility toward anyone else, having no reliance on anyone. It's you can do whatever you want to do every day. It's whimsical, it's untethered. So independence isn't all that great. On the other hand, yeah. You just said it's a useful tool. It's
yes.
Really important to not be dependent and to know that you can get on, you know, that you can solve your own problems. But ultimately, when you have that knowledge, then what you want to work toward is freely chosen relationships.
Yes.
Right? Where you rely on other people.
Yes.
And where other people can rely on you.
Yes.
And you are bound to other people. And that's the opposite of freedom, but it's what really is fulfilling, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your answer to that question with me. I think I've learned a lot in my conversation with both of you today. I think the key word, and you've mentioned it several times, but abundance. And having abundance in your relationships with other people and your community, but also with the natural world, the living world, the animals around you that we should learn more about and also take care of. I'm very grateful that you took so much time to sit down with me and talk about your stories. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about? Final story, a message, a question that I didn't ask?
Well, thank you so much, Ellen. You are a wonderful interviewer.
Yes, I agree. And also, your podcast brings together, as you can tell, two of our big passions.
Yeah.
Climate change and
yes.
How to address it.
Yep.
And ability.
Yes.
Right? Call it disability, call it ability. It's one realm. You don't like, I think I can say for you,
yeah.
You don't like being labeled as being disabled.
No.
Right? And you got really upset about that a few times. And we came to, of course, learning about the medical model and the social model of disability, the idea that, well, you don't wake up in the morning disabled.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Where the disability comes into it when people disable you, when society
yeah.
disables you. So I think we do have to deal with the injustices that are there before we can just be,
yeah.
just say, you know, let's just treat everybody like everybody else. I mean, ultimately that, again, that's like interdependence. That's the goal.
Yes.
But first we have to make things right. We have to make things
yeah.
fair. In a way that they haven't been traditionally. So we're learning as we go, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
It's all a big learning.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Fionn, you have helped me to realize that I don't have to be correct and I don't have to be afraid of people seeing me be incorrect. That actually it won't crush me to be recognized as being a fool about things. And so we try big things.
Yes.
And we often fall on our faces, but then we can laugh about it.
Yeah.
Right? And then we, you know, fail better, right?
Yes.
So, Ellen, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Yes, you are a wonderful interviewer, Ellen. I love your style of interviewing.
Thank you for listening to Enabling Commons. Stay tuned for our next episode and take care.